Good Sunday morning to you. Whoever you are, wherever you have come from, and whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Elaine Bowen, and I am serving as today's worship associate for Walk the Walk. I am joined by Danny Beal, who is our worship leader, Deborah Lynn Hook, a contributor to the service, Hal Walker, the director of music, and the ever-popular UU Church of Kent Peace Choir. Later in the service, we will also be offering a Sacred Song Circle offering. Lay-led services such as today's are a time-honored Unitarian Universalist tradition. We believe that our Sunday services are best reflected in a variety of voices, experiences, and points of view.
We gather together at the end of a difficult week, shattered and confused, yet united in community with ever greater conviction. Let us hold close during this hour, gathering strength and a renewed sense of purpose. Let us reset and refresh our mission to inspire love, to seek justice, and to grow in community, empowering ourselves and each other, leading forth from this place as a light unto the world, sure in our common purpose than when we arrived.
I lost something in November, as did many of you, some piece of my innocence and hope in the goodness of people, a sense of my own family's safety in this world, the thought that my beloved who survive as people of color would continue to see a brighter future, the belief that we as a nation no longer will tolerate the glorification of sexual violence or sexual predators, my hope that we could perhaps slow down the devastating effects we are inflicting on our beautiful earth. It felt as if a bubble popped around me and I was spiraling downwards into an abyss of hopelessness. I knew I was not alone, but the fear and pain around me was little comfort. I suffered another loss in November when our beloved Reverend Melissa left our congregation. She is still walking and living and breathing and doing good work on this earth, but she is no longer here with us. And that loss compounded the hell I felt I was already in. Both events made the other harder to bear. I wasn't ready, even after months of preparing myself to say goodbye to her. It's tough for me to be in this space, to be on this chancel, and not see her smiling back at me with reassurance. I miss Melissa every day, and likely will continue to for a long while. Grief does not have a set timeline, and I appear to be in it for the long haul. I imagine some of you feel this with me, and some of you are probably feeling many other emotions about her absence now. I imagine some of you are ready for our next chapter together. I'm ready to move forward too, but this grief is still sitting heavy in my heart. For anyone who is also struggling without Melissa, we will be meeting here in the sanctuary today at 1 p.m., and we'll seek solace and community together. One of the things I've been missing most is her voice in the world. When awful things have happened to me personally or to all of us collectively, I always knew that on Sunday, I would hear how Melissa saw the work ahead of us, and knowing that was coming was a balm for my soul. She filtered the world for me, for us, and helped us to find our way through the pain to thoughtful consideration or a new spiritual connection or to spur us to action. In the last few months, I've longed to hear Melissa's voice consider all the major events in the world, but I no longer am privileged to get to sit and talk with her or to hear it every week right here. I've had to find new supports for myself. Deep inside my heart, in my soul, I've begun to feel and hear her voice. Sometimes it's loud, sometimes soft, but it is there and it's a gift. She's still challenging me, spurring me to get up and do something, and soothing me when I need loved. I hear another voice in there as well, growing bolder by the day. It is my own, and I can't keep quiet. Come, let us worship together.
Our wisdom words this morning were written in the throes of the marches by Unitarian Universalist minister, the Reverend Lynn Unger. "Breathe," said the wind.
"How can I breathe at a time like this when the air is full of smoke of burning tires, burning lives?"
"Just breathe," the wind insisted.
Easy for you to say, if the weight of injustice is not wrapped around your throat, cutting off all air.
I need you to breathe. I need you to breathe.
Don't tell me to be calm when there are so many reasons to be angry, so much cause for despair.
I did not say to be calm, said the wind. I said to breathe. We're going to need a lot of air to make it through this hurricane. Would you please join me now in a spirit of prayer? Spirit of hope, we have come here this morning from many places and for many reasons. Perhaps one reason we all have is knowing that in this place, in this holy and sacred place, we will find some of what we need to support us, to keep our hearts from breaking further, to help keep us lifted, knowing that together, we can do some healing work, some work of action, to show our neighbors, to show our town, our citizens, to show everyone that we believe in standing on the side of love. We believe in hope. Spirit of life and love, lift us, keep us up in your embrace so that we may walk forward, ever forward, as we attempt to bend the moral arc of the universe closer to the justice we all deserve. Amen, and may it be so.
Our reading this morning comes from Clarissa Pinkola's Estes. She's the author of Women Who Run with the Wolves. My friends, do not lose heart. We were made for these times. I have heard from so many recently who are deeply and properly bewildered. They are concerned about the state of affairs in our world now. Ours is a time of almost daily astonishment and often righteous rage over the latest degradations of what matters most to civilized, visionary people. You are right in your assessments. The luster and hubris some have aspired to while endorsing acts so heinous against children, elders, everyday people, the poor, the unguarded, the helpless, is breathtaking. Yet I urge you, ask you, gentle you, to please not spend your spirit dry by bewailing these difficult times. Especially do not lose hope. Most particularly because the fact is that we were made for these times. Yes, for years we have been learning, practicing, been in training for, and just waiting to meet on this exact plane of engagement. I grew up on the Great Lakes and recognize a seaworthy vessel when I see one. Regarding awakened souls, there have never been more able vessels in the waters than there are right now across the world. And they are fully provisioned and able to signal one another as never before in the history of mankind. Look out over the prow. There are a million, millions of boats of righteous souls on the water with you. Even though your veneers may shiver from every wave in this stormy royal, I assure you that the long timbers composing your prow and rudder come from a greater forest. That long-grained lumber is known to withstand storms, to hold together, to hold its own, and to advance regardless. In any dark time, there is a tendency to veer toward fainting over how much is wrong or unmended in the world. Do not focus on that. There is a tendency, too, to fall into being weakened by dwelling on what is outside of your reach, by what cannot yet be. Do not focus there. That is spending the wind without raising the sails. We are needed, that is all I can know. And though we meet resistance, we more so will meet great souls who will hail us, love us, and guide us. and we will know them when they appear. Didn't you say you were a believer? Didn't you say you pledged to listen to a voice greater? Didn't you ask for grace? Don't you remember that to be in grace means to submit to the voice greater? Ours is not the task of fixing the entire world all at once, but of stretching out to mend the part of the world that is within our reach. Any small, calm thing that one soul can do to help another soul, to assist some portion of this poor, suffering world, will help immensely. It is not given to us to know which acts or by whom will cause the critical mass to tip toward enduring good. What is needed for dramatic change is an accumulation of acts, adding to, adding more, continuing. We know that it does not take everyone on earth to bring justice and peace, but only a small, determined group who will not give up during the first, second, or hundredth gale. One of the most calming and powerful actions you can do to intervene in a stormy world is to stand up and show your soul. Soul on deck shines like gold in dark times. The light of the soul throws sparks, can send up flares, build signal fires, cause proper matters to catch fire. To display the lantern of soul in shadowy times like these, to be fierce and to show mercy towards others, both are acts of immense bravery and great necessity. Struggling souls catch light from other souls who are fully lit and willing to show it. If you would help to calm the tumult, this is one of the strongest things that you can do. There will always be a time when you feel discouraged. I, too, have felt despair many times in my life, but I do not keep a chair for it. I will not entertain it. It is not allowed to eat from my plate. The reason is this. In my uttermost bones, I know something, as do you. It is that there can be no despair when you remember why you came to earth, who you serve, and who sent you here. The good words we say and the good deeds we do are not ours. They are the words and deeds of those who brought us here. In that spirit, I hope you will write this on your wall. When a great ship is in harbor and moored, it is safe, there can be no doubt. But that is not what great ships are built for.
I can't wear my hat because it's going to mess up my microphone and my hair. Wow, what a week. And wow, how glad I am to be here. Finally, a break from reading executive orders on Facebook. Like so many of us here today, my family and I marched last Saturday. My three children and four of their friends in D.C., along with my sister and her college freshman daughter, who marched with a Bernie action figure wearing his own tiny pink hat. My elder son said he went because he wanted to be in solidarity with women. My daughter went to be part of history. I went because I wanted to be surrounded by hope, which I found most dramatically when I got separated from my kids and had to climb onto a rock 5 feet above the ground to look for them. For 2 hours of the pre-march rally, I stood above the crowd on the mall just west of the Capitol building, scanning the pink-hatted masses and the varied signs they carried, which stretched as far as I could see in every direction. I felt the peace of this crowd up there, standing shoulder to shoulder without incident for hours. I experienced the joy in their faces that finally we were doing something. I witnessed from my perch the loving kindness in people's interactions with each other. My 19-year-old son later told me he also was taken with the kindness many observers say characterized the march. People saying, "Excuse me," when they bumped into each other, the crowd parting willingly for a medic coming through to help someone having a panic attack. The tone of the whole rally was super polite, he later said. So many people gathered around love. When my kids finally caught sight of me and I had to slide down the rock to get to them, two young girls held out their arms to catch me. There was hope in other places in a conversation with a woman at a Bikers for Trump rally near the end of the march. She saw my signs and came over to tell me she agreed with me, and thus began a courteous conversation between two women on opposing sides attempting to find common ground. There was hope the day before the march in a variety of peaceful protests and demonstrations, most memorably an 11-year-old Egyptian girl holding aloft a sign that said, "I love America," just at the time the oath of office was being administered. There was hope in the voices of my children. I realized being here at this march, there are no limits to who should have access, my daughter said. No one is above the other. And yet it wasn't all peace and harmony during our few days in the nation's capital. There was the pocket of violent protests on Inauguration Day that resulted in 200 being arrested. During my conversation with the kind Trump supporter, a man came up and tried to argue with me about the Confederate flag. Refusing to entertain his anger and his inability to listen, I ended up walking away in the middle of my conversation with the woman I'd been so eager to talk with. And there were the blunt words of African-American activist Melissa Harris Perry. Speaking to a crowd of mostly white congregants during last week's Sunday services at the oldest UU church in D.C., not many blocks from the White House, Harris Perry told us to get a grip on reality. We don't always get to live in the victorious times, she said, reminding us that African Americans have never lived in the victorious times. I realized during my time in D.C., even in this place where 76% of the residents are registered with my political party, that no matter how many pink hats surround me, I can't live in hope all the time. I also know I can't stay in despair, which is why this church is so important to me, which is why communities like this one are so important, where all the pieces get to be part of the whole. Just as our transition advisor talked a couple of weeks ago about the different stages of acceptance around Melissa's leaving, so are we each on a very personal, sometimes exhausting, and always evolving journey around a new national government. Sometimes I will want to stand at the front of the church talking about the value of community. Other times, I will need to sit in the back with my head in my hands. Both seem to be accepted here. There was an article making the rounds on Facebook during this long, awful week, a blog post called How to Stay Outraged Without Losing Your Mind, in which feminist writer Myra Kurzer points out the toll that resistance can take on us. She suggests easing the burden by focusing on only one or two issues at a time. She suggests making activism fun. Go to a bar and write postcards to Congress people with your friends, for example. She also suggests taking breaks from the movement and being careful to tend to our basic needs. Get enough sleep. Go to therapy. To this, I would add, find community. Go to church, especially a UU church, maybe especially this one. I personally have come to believe loving kindness does not take the place of activism. I believe both are needed in our lives. Which is why I joined this particular church this spring, which is why, and I'll say it again, I'm so glad to be home. Thank you for being here and for listening to my story.
What a week indeed, huh? I've never had to edit a sermon as frequently as I have for this one, because, and who knows what's happening in the world at this moment. Friday night, a woman in Texas sat on her couch, in shock because her husband had been detained at Kennedy Airport. She had worked for a U.S. contractor, and she and her 7-year-old son had been separated from their husband and father for 3 years. In November, her son wrote a letter to Santa, which read, "Dear Santa, can you bring my dad from Sweden, please?" His father was finally granted asylum after years of vetting and cleared by Homeland Security and the State Department on January 20th. But when he arrived in New York Friday, he was detained by custom agents and was told he will be sent to Iraq, the home he and his family left in fear years ago. His wife sat with family and friends in Texas, desperately trying to get information. She said she's not sure how she will tell her son that his wish to see his father will not come true right now. The executive order stating that people from a few select Muslim-majority countries would no longer be granted visas to enter the U.S. was one in a long list of executive actions signed this week. Women, Native Americans, immigrants, people of Muslim faith, our precious water and earth, all were directly affected by these orders. If you're anything like me, you are shocked, saddened, scared for what our future holds and how many people will be harmed. It's very easy to become overwhelmed and feel hopeless. Exactly a week before, Haider al-Shawi was sitting in a room waiting to hear his fate while his family sat so many miles away heartbroken. Bobby and I were traveling to D.C. for the Women's March. We did not yet know that many of our fears about the new administration would be realized so quickly. We just wanted to add our voice to the millions of others who are stating emphatically that we will not sit quietly while the rights of so many are threatened. Clear backpack packed, t-shirts ready, we hit the turnpike, heading to DC. Pretty quickly, it became evident that we were not alone on this journey. We passed a bus, saw dozens of women in pink hats waving to us. The next car we passed, we saw a man driving, wearing a pink hat, with a woman sitting in the passenger seat, knitting with fuchsia yarn. We honked, gave the thumbs up, and kept on our journey. I have to admit that I was initially skeptical when I started hearing about the Women's March, and I was paying close attention to my activist friends, especially people of color. I was worried it was an empty gesture and would not have much impact. Originally, it was not inclusive enough for me to feel comfortable supporting it, but I became increasingly impressed with the organization and the way they were calling in experienced organizers who are women of color from many different movements. Once Black Lives of UU signed on as a partner, I knew I was in. We arrived in DC and woke up the next morning excited to get to the Capitol. There were so many people, an unfathomable number of people as far as the eye could see in every direction. It was a women's march, but I saw every kind of person you can imagine, the most diverse crowd I've ever witnessed in my life. And the feeling in the air was electric and magical. Eye contact everywhere, people helping each other. It was overwhelming and brilliant and empowering and hopeful. I'd like to point out that my march experience is my own, and others have since taken to the internet to share their stories of not feeling as welcomed, of feeling the march centered white women's feminism too much, and they didn't feel there was a space for them. Also, the pink hats carried a definition of woman that not all find inclusive. Many Black women activists in particular decided against going, and some shared anger at white women who have mobilized only now but did not take to the streets when police shootings of unarmed civilians have brought protest. 53% of white women who voted did so for the elected administration, as compared to 94% of Black women who voted for Hillary Clinton, a fact that will not easily be forgotten. This response reminds me of the backlash to the safety pin movement several months ago. I think my first response is often defensiveness. Not all white women. There's also a lot of celebrating the fact that there were no arrests made that day, and I do find pride and hopefulness in that. But I'm also well aware that the police met us with smiles and an outstretched hand, which is very different than at protests I've seen that are predominantly Black, where police enter with riot gear and tanks. This was also called out by activists of color, the inherent difference in a mostly white versus mostly Black march. And I have learned that if I am feeling defensive by what an activist is saying, I need to shut up and listen for a while. Many Black women went, despite their misgivings. Alicia Garza, the co-founder of Black Lives Matter and a featured speaker at General Assembly last year, shared this in an op-ed. I decided to challenge myself to be part of something that isn't perfect, that doesn't articulate my values the way I do, and still show up, clear in my commitment, open and vulnerable to people who are new in their activism. I can be critical of white women and, at the same time, seek out and join with women, white and of color, who are awakening to the fact that all lives do not, in fact, matter without compromising my dignity, my safety, and my radical politics. Hundreds of thousands of people are trying to figure out what it means to join a movement. If we demonstrate that to be part of a movement, you must believe that people cannot change, that transformation is not possible, then it's more important to be right than to be connected and interdependent, we will not win. Thank you, Alicia. Intersectional feminism was the overwhelming message at the march. This is a newer wave of feminism, one that understands that a person's different identities all intersect to create compounding oppression. We must realize that feminism is broader than just a women's issue, that people with multiple marginalized identities are so much more at risk. I relate this to the concept of collective liberation, that until we are all free and have the same rights and protections as others, none of us are truly free. Our fates are tied up inextricably. Our UU principles are also present in this concept for me. Dr. Clarissa Pinkola Estes reminds us to look out over the prow. There are millions of boats of righteous souls on the water with you. In the weeks since the march, we have been inundated with statements and new public policy that is at odds with our beliefs as Unitarian Universalists. It is completely overwhelming, I know. That's how fascism works, overwhelming people into numbness and disbelief until they are immobilized. I feel that everything I value is being set on fire at once, and I don't know where to pour the small glass of water that I have in my possession. I feel powerless to do anything to stop this onslaught that will harm so very many people. I've tried to keep the beautiful energy I felt present in the march with me. They've been calling us snowflakes, implying that we are weak. We will melt under pressure. I adore this metaphor, and I own it. We are snowflakes. Each one of us is unique. Each one of us is beautiful. But what happens when an awful lot of snowflakes come together? You get a blizzard, you get a glacier, or an avalanche. Melted snowflakes carve mountains, bring life to Earth, and become more powerful in aggregate. I witnessed this last weekend when I stood with millions of other snowflakes all over the globe. In 94 countries, all 7 continents, in 914 separate marches in the USA, roughly 1% of the US population gathered that day in witness, protest, anger, and resolve. This is a critical mass. And now the work begins in earnest. It is up to each of us to keep showing up, to march with people who are different from us, to witness their struggle to be free from oppression and recognize it as our own, to keep engaging with democracy through our freedoms of speech and assembly and directly contacting our representatives in government, to talk with that sister-in-law who voted differently than you and now is trying to reconcile her beliefs with what is happening in the world. If you're unsure where to start, there are many members here who can help you and so many resources online. The Women's March has put out a challenge for 10 collective actions for the first 100 days of the administration, and that's a good place to start working at the national level. Black Lives of UU has also put out a resource guide to help people figure out how they can be a part of this movement. But we also need people working in our own communities. The International Institute in Akron assists new refugees to this area, and they need help. They also need supplies. If you're not connected to social media and want to engage, this may be the time to do it. Facebook made the Women's March the largest single protest in world's history possible. There will likely be more marches. Many are already planned, including a scientist's march on Washington. I would love to see a sea of pink hats at the next Black Lives Matter march. We need to show up for each other. Tomorrow, there's a rally in Cleveland showing support for refugees and sanctuary. But beyond marches, there are needs in our own communities for organizers locally. There is also a need for the next generation of leaders. If you've considered running for office before, now is the time. I saw one sign in D.C. that said, "The first female president is probably here." Some of our youth are leading the way, and we should do all we can to support their activism and organizing. Friday night, Megan May organized a postcard writing campaign in her home, and they collectively send out 115 postcards to state and federal legislators. This was the first action called by the leaders of the Women's March. Megan was inspired to take some action, and she just went and did it. Many of us could use some of her bravery in taking the first steps to organize. Whenever a tragedy happens, there's a quote that makes the rounds on social media from Fred Rogers. He says, "When I was a boy and I would see scary things in the news, my mother would always say to me, 'Look for the helpers. You will always find people who are helping.'" I've used this strategy a lot in recent years, especially after the shootings at Mother Emanuel Church and in Orlando. This week, I've had a very tough time shutting off the constant stream of bad news. I find myself reaching for my phone as I awaken, wondering what fresh hell is in store for today. Since at the moment I cannot tear myself away from the news, instead of looking for helpers, I'm seeking out signs of resistance. The National Park Service tweeting out climate change data. Greenpeace activists who scaled a crane to fly a giant banner next to the White House. A visually astounding display with one word, resist. And some good news from last night when a judge ordered a temporary stay on the executive order about immigration and travel from those 7 countries. This means the deportations will not happen immediately, but borders are still closed to refugees. This may be only a temporary victory, but we must savor it regardless, as resistance played a role here. I do not yet know the fate of Haider al-Shaawi and if he will be granted asylum still. I do know that the nation erupted yesterday. Protests grew at airports where the people were being detained. People spoke out loudly, and the ACLU stepped in and sued. Last night, lawyers in New York worked pro bono on a Saturday night to assist the detained people in preparing habeas corpus petitions. That's resistance. As we move into a new ministry here in our congregation, we have a great opportunity to dig deeper into our resolve and decide how we, as a group, want to show up and be in the world. I spoke earlier about Reverend Melissa's voice and how much I miss it, especially during these difficult times. I've also been thinking about the gifts she gave to me. She helped awaken me, spurred me to use my voice in the world, helped me to value and hone my strengths and forgive my weaknesses. I am holding her now in my heart, and she is present in every action I try to take and make the world better. I know she would be proud of the work that we are doing together. Reverend Anya arrives this week, and we will all get to meet them next Sunday. I am so excited to begin a new ministry. I hope that we will strengthen the sense of sanctuary here in this space and explore how to make it a sanctuary for others who need us. I pray that we welcome Reverend Anya with wide open arms and hearts and work together to prepare ourselves for our new journey. Unitarian Universalism is bigger than any one church, one movement. We are millions of people on our own boats in search of others who want to share in community and sanctuary, and we were made for these times. As Dr. Estes said, she reminds us that one of the most calming and powerful actions you can do to intervene in a stormy world is to stand up and show your soul. Soul on deck shines like gold in dark times. The light of the soul throws sparks, can send up flares, builds signal fires, causes proper matters to catch fire. To display the lantern of soul in shadowy times as these, to be fierce and to show mercy toward others, those are acts of immense bravery and great necessity. May it be so, and blessed be. The last thing I'll share with you today is from America Ferrera, from the Women's March on Washington. If we, the millions of Americans who believe in common decency, in the greater good, in justice for all, if we fall into the trap by separating ourselves by our causes and our labels, then we will weaken our fight and we will lose. But if we commit to what aligns us, if we stand together steadfast and determined, then we stand a chance of saving the soul of our country. Thank you, and blessed be.